Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Amelia, welcome to the Emma Gunn Show. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm really good, thanks. It's really lovely to chat with you finally.
I know. We met earlier on this year properly.
Yeah.
And then you coming on the show has been in the works, and we are saving listeners because I know that you will know that Amelia is a nutritional therapist and author full of incredible information, but also creator of some of my favourite recipes. Which I fangirled you with. We are aiming to have that big chat about your incredible career, but we're going to save it until we can do it face to face.
I can't wait.
But this is you very generously sharing your feel-good habits.
It's such a lovely thing to share. It's such a great idea for a podcast. I love it.
Oh, thank you. And well, you are a perfect guest because, as you said, we were just chatting pre-recording. You know, this is something that you do daily with work, and you speak to a lot of people, clients, about all of these sorts of things, and friends, I'm sure. So I'm really intrigued as to what they are, because I have no doubt they're going to be really rich and robust.
Gosh, I don't know. They might be pretty same, but anyway, they're certainly what helped me.
So which one would you like to start with?
So my first thing is, I really believe if I'm in a bad way, whether that be feeling anxious or feeling a bit bleh or feeling a bit down, I seem to remember learning this about 25 years ago, but break the state are the words that always sort of flash up in front of me like a big sign. You know, you've got to sort of change the environment and break that state. So my first thing to always do is to get outside into nature. Now, I'm really lucky to live in the countryside, so I can go for a quick walk by the river, and whether it just be looking at the swans or just looking at the wildlife, or even if I don't have time to go for a proper walk, just to get outside and sort of not literally hug a tree, but, you know, just look at the trees and sort of take in their magnitude and try and take in their age and imagine their life and what they've seen. And it's just so simple, but so brilliant for just changing that mindset that can be quite or negative or whatever.
That's so beautiful. I've often thought about how big expansive trees might have really long roots. I've never thought about the context of what they might have seen.
Yes, because it just blows my mind how old some trees are. I'm sort of quite passionate about the seasons, the changing seasons, you know, specifically around vegetables. And I am lucky enough to grow my own vegetables. So that's another sort of thing that I do to just change my mood, because I just find it so therapeutic getting my hand in the soil and watching vegetables grow or planting them, sowing the seeds, etc. So it is incredibly therapeutic and rewarding to do. But yeah, just so any kind of nature and sort of taking in just how amazing it is. It's so much bigger than us.
I read a piece, and I'm trying to remember who wrote it. I think it might have been Catlin Moran years ago, saying, describing gardening as time travel.
Yeah.
Because, and I thought that was so wonderful about, you know, putting something in the ground there for the future and how it'll all look.
Yes. Yeah. And to be able to know that you can actually feed yourself from growing. Yeah. I find just nature to be so brilliant at healing, at calming, at restoring, at breaking that state. And I think it's a good tool. I often use that with clients when they're about to sabotage themselves, or if they're having sort of persistent patterns. I just always try and make them think of the break the state. What can we do right now in this moment to just break the state?
I love that. I've never actually heard that. And I like the idea of it coming up as a neon sign, actually. Yeah. And I have a feeling that'll stay with me.
Oh, good.
Because I think we can all get into negative patterns really easily. Mm. And if you've just got that warning system, like, you know, the engine, check engine light in your car.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what it's like. You can get a I get negative emails from people who just criticize my work or challenge or have a, you know, everyone's got opinions. And, you know, sometimes that can really take me down a dark rabbit hole of a thought process and how to respond and how to react and everything. And sometimes you just need to break the state, go and do something nice for yourself and then come back.
How do you deal with that, the negativity? I mean, I'm guessing that's coming from social media.
I get a lot from social media and a lot from emails, and it's just everyone, you know, nutrition runs very deeply for so many people. It affects everyone. It affects everyone, full stop. Mm. It affects everyone in different ways. And so it stirs up so many emotions for people, and people do have so many opinions on it, and certainly opinions on how I should behave or speak or talk or share or whatever. So it does affect me. It really affects me, but I just have to constantly look after myself by doing things like getting out into nature and remembering you can't please everyone, and you've just got to stay true to you, do your best, and recognize that there's always going to be people that are have a different approach.
I had Dr. Rupi Aujla on the podcast recently, and we were talking about social media and nutrition specifically, and it's the only time I've ever experienced real negativity is when I did a podcast where I said, what's the ketogenic diet all about then? And I got so much, like, one person saying to someone else, look at this, look what she's done, and sort of piling on about how I was promoting the ketogenic diet, which wasn't in actual fact what I was doing.
It doesn't matter how well intentioned you are or even how knowledgeable. It's just your comments can be picked apart in a way that I just don't know, and I haven't seen that happen in any other industry. So I'm probably over cautious now with my sharing. I overthink everything that I say and write and do, and it probably has reduced the amount that I share and write about it, because it's quite a minefield. But then I share with my heart, and a lot of thought that's gone into it. So I think less is more.
I think what I've noticed with friends who've experienced quite a lot of trolling or just negativity is that it actually roots them a bit more, because they sort of question themselves beforehand, and they really, it actually, even though it's horrible, it sort of gives them a sense of really understanding who they are and what they stand for, because they have to question themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I can agree with that.
Yes. Okay. That's really interesting. And break the state. I mean, you are a nutritional therapist and your work speaks for itself. And obviously we will go into huge detail about it when you come on the show for the main podcast, but you talk about break the state with clients. Mm. And I've definitely done most of my self-sabotaging orally.
You're not alone there.
And so is that something, I'm glad that you said that, by the way, but is that break the state? Is that pattern of perhaps I would say in my own life self-harming, but I realize that's overdoing it. Sabotaging, for example, by overeating or whatever it might be. Is that something? Is that a cycle that's incredibly hard to break?
It is, because really, it's not about the food. It's about consciousness. It's about becoming aware of our habits and how we're using food, and what our habits are. Are about or hiding or I'm happy to share my experiences. Whenever I'm anxious, which I do get anxious often, whenever I'm anxious, I believe that I'm hungry. So I'll be that person constantly making a cup of tea. Oh, I need something, head in the fridge, you know, desperately trying to find the solution in the fridge. I had this pattern for years and years. It doesn't matter how much nutritional knowledge one has, you can still fall into these habits. But obviously with the work that I do, I started to recognize this pattern. And this is what I always talk about with clients, but it's what I have to do with myself still to this day, frequently. When I believe that I'm hungry and find myself going to the fridge looking for a solution, is I have to stop and say, okay, what's really going on here? And it's actually about, it takes a bit of courage, really, because to pause and allow the feeling that you're trying to avoid a platform to have its moment and say what's going on. But actually, once you do that, And the voice comes up, the fear comes up, the anxiety. Oh, somebody thinks I'm not a very good nutritionist, or, oh, somebody, I've offended someone, or, you know, whatever it is. Once you've actually given it that stage and it's had its moment to talk about it, then it's nowhere near as fearful as the thing that you're trying to avoid. So now I'm much better at noticing, because obviously a lot of us are unconscious in our day-to-day lives and we don't really pause to name what we're feeling. We just find our head stuck in the fridge and don't know why, or do other things that maybe are, to use your word, sabotaging our goals. So it sort of ties in with breaking the state. I know that what I need to do is stop, give the words the platform. And then once you sit with that uncomfortable feeling and you let it have its moment and you think, what's the worst case scenario is, okay, I did offend someone. Okay, I am a rubbish nutrient, you know, the worst case. And then do something really loving for yourself. So for me, that's sort of like, it moves on to actually to my next point. But when I really need to sort of nurture myself, I love to light the fire. There's something that I just find, I've got a log fire here. And I just find there's something, maybe it reminds me of my childhood. There's just something so nurturing and calming of sitting and hearing the crackling logs. And it just brings me down to earth. And to me, that's a sort of a big hug. And that's the kind of thing I'll do if I've been anxious, avoiding the anxiety, sat with the anxiety, let it have its moment, and then feel that vulnerability. Then I will light a fire, have a cup of tea or something nice, cuddle my dog. And it's just a sort of gentle, loving act for myself. And then I'm able to move on with the rest of my day without my head stuck in the fridge.
That's really helpful, because I've definitely been in that place, and I'm sure people listening have, where you sort of put the mirror up. Maybe you realize that your behavior hasn't been the way you want it to be, whether it's towards yourself or someone else. And so you're realistic and you become self-aware, but then you can linger in that space and sort of beat yourself up. And I love the idea of accept it and then do something nurturing. Yeah. And I love the idea of the fire.
I think we have to do sort of more kind things for ourselves when we allow ourselves to, you know, have that vulnerability.
Have you seen on Netflix, there is an hour long, there are two of them, and they are a fire being lit. And then for an hour, it's just the fire being filmed as it burns down. Wow. One's a Christmas edition and one's just a normal one. I don't have a fireplace. Well, so in the winter.
Yes. My God, I would totally do that if I didn't have a fire. There's something, I don't know, I find it so, it's like a meditation, just watching it and hearing the crackling. And I mean, honestly, even in a summer's day, I'll light a fire if I need to.
Really? Okay, well, maybe I'll try it, because I find it a really good companion when I'm reading.
How lovely. Oh, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
I'll text you the link or text you the name of it.
We all have our comforts, don't we?
Do you like the sound of it? But I was speaking to someone the other day. I don't think it was on a podcast, although sometimes I forget what I have recorded and what I haven't. But somebody was talking about how they just watch the flames, and that is really meditative.
That's what I mean. It's like the whole thing, watching it, the heat, the warmth. I find it so soothing.
Do you like cooking on fire? Are you an outdoor cook?
No, not at all. No, I'm really not at all. I don't really like barbecues, and I really don't like charred food. I don't like the taste. And I think I'm going to sound bonkers now, but, you know, just nutritionally, we don't really want to be overly burning our food. So it doesn't really appeal for me. But that does lead me nicely on to my third habit, which, of course,
like we've choreographed it.
Of course, I couldn't be doing the job that I didn't do if I didn't find cooking to be an incredibly therapeutic practice. And it's changed for me so much over the years, because when I first became a nutritionist, I didn't know how to cook. I was just learning the theory and the science and the sort of how to become a practitioner. And once I started working with clients, I realized that most people just wanted to know what to eat for breakfast, and that I had to get sort of more creative with my own cooking. And I kind of taught myself to cook, thanks to Jamie Oliver, because his style of cooking, which is sort of not very precise, that really appealed to me, because I just can't follow the rigidity of a recipe. But I sort of look at Jamie Oliver's style of cooking and his recipes and just think, yeah, I can switch that and make that a bit healthier or whatever. So cooking became a really sort of nourishing, yes, it was part of my career, but it was also part of my healthcare. And I had the time to cook in those days because I lived alone and I just studied and worked and I had the time. So it became my sort of way to keep myself company in the evenings. I would turn on some nice music and cook a lovely meal. And so that sort of really evolved into, you know, so much of my work, and I'm probably more of a foodie now than anything. But since becoming a mum, you suddenly don't have the same time that I used to have. I've had to sort of, I quite miss it. I quite miss having that chunk of time where I can just put on some music, and cooking is more of a relaxed hobby rather than, oh my God, I've got a toddler to feed in 20 minutes before she has a complete meltdown. So if ever I do get a chunk of time to just be alone, I love nothing more. Light the fire, put on some jazz, cook. And it's another breaking of the state, but it's another really sort of, I don't enjoy cooking for a crowd as much as I do just enjoy that process of just cooking and assembling a meal. Like, what have I got in the fridge? What can I make? And make something just for myself. Whereas when you're cooking for people, there's a bit more of a, you know, you have to deliver it at a certain time. People are waiting. So I don't enjoy the pressure of that as much as having that time alone without question, without any demands, just to create something.
I was going to ask, actually, what's the music? You said jazz.
Yeah.
And I find that, and I've started listening to a little bit of jazz recently. Uh-huh. And it's a really good transition. I do very much the same thing. Finish work, put something like that on and sort of potter around deciding, am I going to do yoga? Am I going to do some cooking? And it's kind of good transition music when your head just needs to relax.
Yes. Yeah, I do find it deeply relaxing. I mean, I'm not a very musical person. I wouldn't be able to name pop stars or music, or, you know, I don't know the names of jazz musicians, but I just put on a compilation and I love it.
Yeah, Spotify. Yeah,
exactly.
Jazz radio. No, I do agree with you. That's really nice. And I think one of my favorite recipes to cook at the moment is one that requires dicing celery, carrots, and mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And I batch cook it. And that process of dicing those for 25 minutes is better than any meditation.
It is really therapeutic. It's funny that you say that, because a lot of people, the biggest obstacle for people when it comes to cooking.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Or even approaching healthy eating is that vegetables take so long to prepare. And I always say, well, it just depends on whether you've got knife skills and whether you kind of know how to chop en masse. But I guess if you're short of time, usually that's the biggest obstacle for people cooking from scratch, is just all of the time it takes to chop and peel vegetables.
I started really cooking from scratch for every meal last summer when I had my breast reduction. So I was at home a lot and I wanted to cook good, healthy food, nourishing food. And it surprises me every single time how quickly you can have and then turn it into something
totally.
Else.
Oh, I love to hear you saying that. It's so true, but sometimes people don't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. So what else do we have on your list?
About five years ago, I did a proper meditation course and I learned to meditate properly. I did the Vedic meditation, which is just 20 minutes twice a day. In truth, I've very rarely managed to do it twice a day. But when I'm feeling really frazzled, or when life's getting too busy, or when my toddler is having a complete meltdown, I've got no control over it and I feel just like, I can't cope. I try and take myself off, even if it's just for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, Vedic meditation. And I'm so glad that I invested the time. actually learning how to do it, because I used to try doing the apps and never really feel that I was getting anywhere. And once I learned that it's absolutely fine to have a really busy head and a really noisy, crazy thoughts and things through throughout meditation, then it sort of really gave me permission to do it and enjoy it. And I absolutely find it life-changing to do. So it's something that don't do it as often as I should, but when I do it, it is without doubt the best way to change my mood.
I have learned from many people that actually meditation finds you when you need it most. Were you at a point in your life where actually it sort of presented itself?
I was.
And actually it was a really real
problem. I was. I'd had sort of 4 years of just nonstop miscarriages. I'd been desperately trying to have a baby, and I had no problem falling pregnant, but I could never get to, you know, every time I got to my the 3 month scan, the baby had always died. So I had to have multiple surgeries as well. It wasn't sort of, you know, I mean, not that any of it's easy, but it took a big toll on my health and my mental health. And I got to the point where my doctor we tried some sort of various, I didn't do IVF, but we tried tests to see why the babies were always such poor quality. And the doctor just said, long story short, but just said, forget it. You're never going to be able to be a mother. Your only options are adoption or egg donation. And so I was at the stage where I was really having to let go of my desire to be a mother and start to think about what my life was going to look like, because I'd always imagined myself as a mum more than it, you know, my career was sort of something that I was doing well until I became a mum. And so it was definitely a very challenging time for me. And Jasmine Hensley sent me a message saying, have you tried Vedic meditation? Here's Gillian Lavender's number. Give her a call. Amazing. And so I got in touch with Gillian Lavender, who runs the London Meditation Centre. And I just loved her because she's so down to earth. She used to work in publishing. She's not someone that's sort of always been spiritual. She understands a busy world, and she's just got a very realistic approach to meditation. And so I did a sort of 1 week intensive course with her because I really wanted to get that kind of help. And, you know, I can't credit meditation completely, but I fell pregnant naturally 3 months later and now have my daughter Willow. And obviously I do really need to emphasize that I'm not saying that that was down to meditation. I don't really know what made that happen, but, I definitely feel that meditation helped get me through quite a dark place and maybe did change my levels of anxiety and you know, the state of energy in my body, how I manage things.
Do you feel, doing a week long intensive course, I've never done anything like that, so just out of curiosity, was it palpable at the end? Did you feel a weight was lifted?
Oh yeah. I mean, when I say week long intensive course, I mean, it was just 2 hours every day. It wasn't like, you know, locked behind a door, just meditating all the time. It was just 2 hours a day. But I remember just on day two, meditating in a way that I'd never meditated before, just getting into a sort of a different layer, a different level of depth that I hadn't experienced. And I remember it was just around the time, it was 4 years ago, it was when Donald Trump just became president. And, I remember just feeling stressed about that as well. It was fantastic. And I mean, I still check in with Gillian regularly. She's a brilliant teacher.
You're not the first person to mention them. Mm. And I'm trying to remember who the other person was who has been on the show and has recommended them. It will come to me before the end of our conversation.
Lots of people, but they're just very approachable and very, it feels like meditation for real life.
Ah, that's interesting. Because it can feel like it's a bit like if you are meditating, then maybe you're a certain type of person, but it really is for
everybody. All of these stigmas that come into health and wellness, and it just doesn't have to be that way. And I think a lot of people have the idea with meditation that you have to sit in a really uncomfortable, awkward position and wear flowing clothes and be able to chant, and you know, and it really is not. And also believe that you have to completely empty your mind and, you know, have no thoughts at all. Just not the case. yeah, Gillian really is the opposite of all of those things.
Oh, that's really interesting. I will put the links in the show notes, listeners. So that means we must beat your final habit.
What is my final one?
These have been great, Amelia.
Oh, really? Oh, good. So my final one is I do love to give myself a bit of a pamper. So when I'm feeling just, you know, when it's a busy week or something, I love nothing more than to put a face mask on. I'm such a face mask junkie. I love a good face mask. And to put on really lovely, clean pyjamas or, you know, nighty. I spend more money on sleepwear. I just love pyjamas. I don't know, it's really square, but there's nothing nicer. So maybe a nice bath, give myself a facial, put on clean pyjamas, go to bed, read a few pages of a book. I never manage to get past a couple of pages of a book since becoming a mum. I just pass out, fall asleep. But I think it's really important to give myself permission to like have a night off, have an early night, not feel like I have to cook or do chores or talk to my husband or call family and friends, and just sometimes just take that time for me. And again, since becoming a mum, it's become a sort of thing that I do once a week. And it just makes me feel better, you know, to wake up with glowing skin and having had a really good night's sleep.
It would be remiss of me not to ask if you have any favourite masks.
Well, gosh, so I've got a really lovely one by Sarah Chapman, which, you know, the paper, the whatever, you peel it off. The one. Thank you. And Tata Harper. I use Tata Harper a lot. And Trilogy are some of my favourites. Oh, and actually,
nice. Do you just like
one from a new brand called Essie, ESSE, and they're all about probiotic skincare, and it's just really natural. I've only just started using them, but yeah, they're really, really lovely brand, and I've got a really nice mask there. But I like, because my skin's quite dry, and I get rosacea, so it gets quite red and sensitive. So I like really moisturising, heavy, thick masks as opposed to a sort of drying out mask.
No, yes, yes. Yeah, that kind of mask that the next morning it's pillowy. Your skin is pillowy and plump.
Exactly.
That's the dream. That's the dream. Also, you're not alone. In lockdown, I've bought quite a few sleep shorts.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. That makes me feel better.
And I have a very strict, I don't know about you, I have a very strict schedule on changing my bed sheets.
Oh, yes, me too. Me too. Every 3 days.
So... Oh, every three days in the summer or just all year round?
I just remember once watching this. It's probably not even true, but I remember once watching about bed bugs and getting it into my head that bed bugs, you know, start to grow after 3 days. So I love crisp, clean bed sheets.
Yeah. I like to strip the bed on a Friday morning so that when I get into bed on a Friday night, I'm starting the weekend in a clean bed. But then sometimes, depending on fake tanning schedule.
I don't do that. Yeah, that would make me change my bed sheets more. So I do it every Friday morning because I love having clean sheets for the weekend, and then every Tuesday morning. Great. So it's...
Maybe I need to start changing my bed linen more.
No, please don't think that. That's just me. I have a toddler that comes onto my bed and scatters crumbs and things, and I also have a dog that jumps onto my bed regularly as well, so they do need changing often.
Yes. I don't have those. Now you've shared with me your feel-good habits, which I'm very grateful for, but listeners, I want to just let you know one of the things that makes me feel good that has directly to do with Amelia, and I fangirled in your face quite a lot when I met you, because one of my favorite recipes of all time is the slow cook beef curry.
And I love you for that.
It is the most glorious thing to make, and it is the most rewarding meal. And it's a slow cooker. It's just so, so wonderful. So partly thank you for putting that recipe out to the universe, because you know it brings me joy, and the prawn one.
Such a pleasure.
But also, if you're listening to this and quite rightly thinking, oh, I'd like to try one of Amelia's recipes. And you eat red meat, or there is also a prawn one, isn't there? Are they in the same
book? No, different books. But I mean, I sort of always encourage people to understand that you can pretty much adapt any curry. The basis is the same. So the flavors, that, you know, the spices are the same. So you could, that beef curry that you like, if you want to make that vegan, you can just switch the beef for something like chickpeas or butter beans, and it will work just as well. Or you could change it to chicken or to prawns. I always want people to have more confidence that they don't have to follow a recipe so religiously, and that they can use the flavors and the basis and switch things up. So I love you for loving the beef recipe, because not many people ever talk about that recipe, because so many followers are plant-based or interested in the plant-based recipes. So I agree with you. I love that beef recipe, and I do make it often. But
I don't eat red meat a lot, but when I do, it'll be because I've made your curry. But I'm going to try it with butter beans.
Oh, yeah, it's so good. It's so good. Maybe not in the slow cooker, or, you know, add the butter beans at the very end, because obviously they would just fall apart. Unless you're cooking them from scratch, like dried butter beans, then you could put them in at the beginning. But you also don't necessarily have to, you know, slow cook it. You can use the same flavors and do it in a faster version in a pan. But in the other books, there's, I mean, I'm a big curry lover. So I think that you've got a variety of curries in all four of my books, but certainly the last book, the most recent book, Simply Good For You, has, you know, so many different vegan, plant-based, vegetarian and meat options.
I really do. They are. I mean, I have only really got into cookbooks recently, and I must admit, yours always have a story, or always just feel... when you're making them, you feel the goodness, if that makes any sense.
I love that. That's the goal. That's the goal. But hopefully that they're really simple and easy as well, because my mission is to, you know, make healthy simple, because I just think that, unfortunately, healthy eating, healthy living, well-being has just been burdened with this concept that it's really complicated, expensive, faddy, and void of joy, which is just not true. And who's to, I mean, of course, there's a place in life for hedonism and fun, but I take just as much pleasure from looking after myself as I do from letting my hair down and eating pizza and drinking wine. You know, I think that there's a place for both, but I get really frustrated that people label taking care of yourself through like healthy eating as meaning that you're boring and dull. I think it's really unfair.
It's unfair and it's nonsense. And I have your books, and I can testify to the fact that it is nonsense, and that those books are not boring or dull or joyless or any of those things. They're really, really wonderful. So thank you. I will obviously put the links to all of the books, to your social media and those face masks in the show notes. But Amelia, thank you so much for those habits. They're amazing.
Oh, I'm so pleased. Thank you. Lovely to see you.